Hello and welcome to Back Row, a fortnightly movie podcast with me, Mike, and usually Rhianna Dillon. However, this week Rhianna is not with us. We are both away seeing family over the Christmas break, so instead it's going to be a very short mini episode just with me. Chopped liver, I'm afraid. But Rhianna and I will be back next week with our big 2016 roundup episode, and we'll be discussing all of our best and worst movies of the year. For now, I thought I'd discuss some of the big movies that are out in cinemas right now over the Christmas break. So specifically, three new releases and one classic that's getting re-released. So let's start with one of the new releases, Passengers.
We boarded the Avalon with a destination. 120 years hibernation means we'll wake up in a new century on a new planet. But a year ago, everything changed.
Hello? Anybody here?
Hello? Do you know what's going on? Nobody else is awake.
I think something went wrong with the hibernation pods. We woke up too soon. 9 years too soon.
This can't be happening. We have to go back to sleep.
We can't. Something's wrong. Something big.
So Passengers is directed by Morten Tildum, who had previously made The Imitation Game, and this is light years away from that. The story is set aboard a spaceship, and it's carrying 5,000 passengers to a brand new planet. All the passengers are currently in hypersleep. They're sort of midway through their journey, when all of a sudden asteroids collide with the ship. They cause a disruption in some sort of central mainframe or operating system or some cobblers. And one random passenger, played by Chris Pratt, is woken. He discovers that the rest of the ship is still in hypersleep and they still have another 90 years left of their journey. So, obviously, as you can imagine, Chris Pratt is a bit devastated and shell-shocked at the thought of spending the rest of his life completely alone in space with no one to keep him company except a robotic bartender, played by Michael Sheen. Chris Pratt therefore debates whether or not to deliberately wake up another passenger from hypersleep, namely one played by Jennifer Lawrence, who has caught his eye. By waking her up, he would also be sentencing her to 90 years in space and thus ruining her life simply in order to have some company. But that is what he does. After a year by himself, he finally succumbs to his urges and he wakes up Jennifer Lawrence.
Hello.
The two then begin this strange relationship and existence together aboard this ghost ship hurtling through outer space, with Jennifer Lawrence's character blissfully unaware that she's actually been woken up deliberately. So the premise itself is interesting, and there's definitely some potential there for some truly great drama. Just this whole empty ghost ship and these two characters in the centre of it falling in love, but with obviously Chris Pratt's character having this very dark secret. There's their whole foundation of their relationship is built on this horrible deception. So the first half of the movie really hooked me in, particularly the very first act in which Chris Pratt just sort of wanders alone aboard this ship, sort of teetering on the edge of insanity. It reminded me a bit of classic sci-fi movies like Silent Running or sort of more modern masterpieces like Moon or Gravity. However, what could have been this brilliant, thought-provoking thriller drama, unfortunately it does cop out a bit midway through and instead it turns into this kind of romance space romp. And actually turns into complete twaddle in the last act. I mean, there's stuff that happens that you just, that none of it is plausible or feasible. And also, I feel like they lost what was the main central conceit, the gem of this story, something that was actually quite different and really interesting and thought-provoking. That all got sacrificed for big explosive action scenes towards the end. It's a real shame because somewhere at the heart of this story, there is something really interesting. There's this other film, this morally ambiguous movie about humanity and companionship and isolation, but this isn't that movie. This is a Jennifer Lawrence and Chris Pratt movie. They are both great, and, you know, especially Chris Pratt, who spends a large chunk of the movie by himself. The special effects and the production design are really slick and impressive, but sadly, by the end, there just isn't much beneath this glossy, superficial surface, and I was left feeling a bit frustrated. So, 6 out of 10 for Passengers.
She didn't seem that impressed.
Next up, let's talk about a classic, something that's getting a re-release for its 15th anniversary. It's a strange movie about adolescence, about mental health, about schizophrenia, about time travel, and about giant talking bunnies. I am, of course, talking about Richard Kelly's cult classic, Donnie Darko.
I'm going to tell you a little story today about a young man whose life was completely destroyed by fear. Under the blue moon I saw you.
So soon you'll take me. Up
in your you want to tell mom and dad why you stopped taking your medication?
So for those who may not have seen this film and who don't know this story, Donnie Darko was released in 2001, and although beginning life as a small sort of indie art house movie, it soon took the world by storm. It's set in the 1980s, and the titular character of Donnie Darko, played by Jake Gyllenhaal, is woken one night by a man called Frank, who is standing in his bedroom in a strange bunny costume. He tells Donnie to follow him down to a golf course and then informs him that the world is ending in 28 days, 6 hours, 42 minutes and 12 seconds. Thus begins Donnie Darko's strange descent down a rabbit hole, no pun intended, as he and we figure out exactly what's going on and how he may be able to stop this potential impending apocalypse. But of course, is there really an impending apocalypse, or is this all in Donnie's mind? Is this the story of science fiction, of time travel, of wormholes, of apocalypses, or is this a strange story journeying into the mind of a mentally ill teenager? It's a really, really brilliant film. The shots of Donnie Darko riding his BMX around these sort of 80s suburban Americana, it really struck me as being an early example of something that's so popular now, of these types of nostalgic movies that evoke Stephen King and Steven Spielberg. You know, programs like Stranger Things, for example, you know, they totally steal from that aesthetic, but Donnie Darko was one of the first examples to do this. However, that's not to say that this is in any way like a Stephen King or Steven Spielberg story. If anything, this is much more David Lynch. It's a twisted, complex, surreal jigsaw puzzle of a movie that, despite multiple viewings, I'm never able to completely make sense of. But that's what I love about it. The movie is ambiguous, but it's also brilliantly entertaining. There's an excellent ensemble cast in this movie, including the likes of Maggie Gyllenhaal, Patrick Swayze, Drew Barrymore. There's even a short appearance by Seth Rogen. We've got Jenna Malone, and of course, Jake Gyllenhaal, who steals the movie in his debut movie role. It's just got this brilliant mix of being both very challenging but completely entertaining. So it means that even if you do struggle to make sense of everything towards the end, you'll have really enjoyed the journey of trying to work it all out and piece it all together. Also, with a soundtrack that includes Tears for Fears, Echo and the Bunnymen, Duran Duran, and Joy Division, you simply can't go wrong. You give yourself to him. You give yourself to him. So for me, this movie is a classic. It's aged brilliantly and is all the more spectacular seen on a big screen. It is a must-see 10 out of 10.
Wake up, Donnie.
On to our next new release now, A Monster Calls.
How does the story begin?
With a boy, too old to be a kid.
You're coming to live with me. Don't touch anything.
Too young to be a man.
I no longer see you.
What did he do?
He called.
Cools is a fantasy drama starring Sigourney Weaver, Felicity Jones, Liam Neeson, and the 14-year-old actor Lewis McDougall, who is brilliant in the central role. He plays Connor, a boy struggling to come to terms with the impending loss of his mother, who is dying of cancer. He finds comfort and solace in a strange tree monster who comes to life in his back garden and visits him in the middle of the night three times, telling him stories. So let's start with the good things about this film. A Monster Calls is one of the most visually stunning movies you'll see this year. It's based on the illustrated kids book by Patrick Ness, and it really does feel as though we're seeing an illustrated book come to life. Everything looks like it's been painted with watercolours almost, and the production design and the visual effects are just jaw-dropping. The director J.A. Bayona also directed movies like The Orphanage, so he has this real gift for sort of dark fairy tale aesthetics and stories. The performances across the board are brilliant too. Felicity Jones once again blew me away with her portrayal of the dying mother. Sigourney Weaver was brilliant despite an occasionally ropey English accent, and Liam Neeson brings both warmth and gravitas to the voice of the monster. The problem I had with this movie, however, was it's just so relentlessly miserable. I mean, there are a lot of movies out there that are fairy tales on the surface, but are very, very dark dramas underneath. One of which being Pan's Labyrinth, which is my favourite film of all time. But the thing about Pan's Labyrinth is it balanced those elements so well. It was this beautiful dark fairy tale, but it was also this very adult war movie, at times even a horror movie. It was both heartbreaking and scary and exciting. A Monster Calls is just heartbreaking. There's not much else to it. At the screening that Rihanna and I attended, there wasn't a single audience member not sobbing, and this was full of adult journalists. I mean, I truly think kids would be traumatised by this movie. There's so little hope. We are literally watching the story of this boy whose mother is slowly dying of cancer, and he's getting bullied at school, and there's no one else around him who he can turn to, apart from this monster. But the scenes with the monster are too few and far between. They're too brief, and to be honest, the stories he told, the magic, it just wasn't there for me. The magic or the escapism, the fantasy side wasn't fantastic enough, and the dark, gritty side wasn't dark and gritty enough. There isn't enough that will entertain kids. In fact, it will traumatise kids. And there isn't enough meaty subject matter like Pan's Labyrinth for adults. So I do think this movie was a bit of a failure despite an ambitious one. There are lots of things to appreciate and admire about it, but unfortunately very little to enjoy. 5 out of 10 for A Monster Calls.
I wish I had 100 years. 100 years I could give to you. I'm afraid.
Of course you are afraid. But you will make us through. For this is why you called me. Come on.
And finally, the last movie I'm going to talk about is Martin Scorsese's Silence.
Ferrera is lost to us. He denounced God in public and surrendered the faith.
That's not possible. Father Ferrera risked his life to spread our faith all over Japan.
It seems to me that our mission here is more urgent than ever. We must go find Father Ferrera.
This is in your hearts, then, both of you?
Yes.
Then I must trust God has put it down. The moment you set foot in that country, you step into high danger.
Silence is all set in the 17th century when two Portuguese Jesuit priests face violence and persecution when they travel to Japan to locate their mentor and also to sort of bring and propagate Catholicism. Now, this is a strange film. So you've got two priests played by Adam Driver and Andrew Garfield who kind of take us on this journey to 17th century Japan. They are extremely devoted Catholics and they are desperate to bring Catholicism to this country. But Japan doesn't want to accept Catholicism. In fact, they greet Catholicism with persecution, torture, and death. So what we get, therefore, in this movie is, to be honest, a lot of torture. It is a little bit like The Passion of the Christ meets The Revenant or something. It's very artistic. It's very beautiful. This is obviously something that Martin Scorsese has wanted to do for a long time. It's been 27 years in the making. It's a very personal project of his. But it is a slog to watch. I mean, it feels like a movie that a director has made for himself and not for anyone else, and that's absolutely fine. And it still has real touches of brilliance. Although it goes on for 2 hours and 40 minutes, I was never bored, and I was always in awe at just how beautiful the movie looked and just how compelling the characters all were. Andrew Garfield and Adam Driver are brilliant in the lead roles, as is Liam Neeson, and you've also got some brilliant Japanese actors as well, particularly Issei Ogata, who plays the old samurai, the kind of interrogator.
The price for your glory is their suffering.
And the movie couldn't be more different to Martin Scorsese's previous movie, The Wolf of Wall Street. I mean, there's no kind of frenetic editing or camera movement in this. It's very still, everything is very painting-like, very tableau-like, it's very old-fashioned and slow, and we have long scenes in which characters discuss and debate religion and theology, and it does bring about lots of interesting thoughts and questions and stuff that I'm still struggling to get my head around, really, about the nature of religion and practicing religion, and whether that is a good thing or whether that ultimately always results in war and persecution and death. And, you know, I'm constantly going back and forth on where I land on this, having seen the movie. And it's interesting that the movie itself was premiered in the Vatican. It has been endorsed by the Catholic Church, although I would argue there are a lot of moments in this film that I think don't endorse the Catholic Church at all. So it's definitely an interesting film. It's a meaty film. It's a film that is going to stay with you, and you're going to think about it, and you're going to discuss it with people. But if you're looking for an entertaining, exciting romp to watch over Christmas, this isn't it. It is very slow. I can imagine that some people would find this tedious. This is very, very low key, and it won't give a lot of people what they're after. However, I did enjoy it, despite reservations, and I'm already debating whether or not to go and see it a second time, so that can't be a bad thing. I would give this 7 out of 10.
I pray, but I'm lost. Am I just praying to silence?
And that's it from me. So you've got a nice mix of movies that you could potentially go and watch over your Christmas break. If you're up for a fun, albeit stupid, action adventure set in space, then go and see Passengers. Go and see sexy Chris Pratt and Jennifer Lawrence do their thing. If you want something challenging and thought-provoking and maybe something that will invoke discussion, then go and see Silence by the brilliant Martin Scorsese. If you want to go and see a good old classic, something that maybe you've never seen on the big screen before, or something that you've just never managed to watch until now, please go and see Donnie Darko. It is a great cinematic experience. Or if you do want to wallow in pain, misery, and have a good cry for pretty much 2 solid hours, then go and see A Monster Calls. So that's it from me. Next week I will be once again joined by the brilliant Rhianna Dillon, and we will be bringing you our next full proper episode, and we're going to be counting down our top 10 movies of 2016. So do check that out. Please subscribe to us on iTunes. Please leave us a rating or a review. If you would like to tweet us, then please by all means do. Anytime. We love hearing from you. Our Twitter is at Backrow Films. You can also visit our website, which is backrowpodcast.net, where you can read articles by us, reviews. You can find out a bit more about me and Rhianna, what we do. You can find links to other websites and other things that we've been involved with. And you can also go back through the whole archive of Backrow episodes, 40 episodes now, and go and revisit them. So thank you very much. I hope you all had a wonderful Christmas, and I hope you all have a wonderful new year. And we will be back next week.